Hey, are we live yet? Are we live yet? Testing. 1, 2, 3. Welcome to Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's online podcast with your host, Jan Irvin. Here we investigate the religious, the mysterious, the entheogenic, the shamanic, and the Gnostic with the small g. If you haven't heard it someplace else, you'll likely hear it here. So sit back and relax. Take a trip through time and a journey through your mind as we investigate the ancient mysteries.
Welcome to Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 36. I'm your host, Jan Irvin. What is the future of medical marijuana? Why is federal law violating the Constitution and state sovereign rights? And why is President Obama still allowing federal prosecution of medical marijuana patients and caregivers against his campaign promises? In this episode, I interview my friend Eddie Lepp, a man who has spent the last 20 years of his life on the front lines in the fight over patients' rights to use medical marijuana, and is a well-honored activist, honored by High Times as Activist of the Year, amongst many other awards, and is also noted as having been involved in the largest marijuana bust in DEA history and the largest medical marijuana raid in the history of the world. In 2004, Lepp was raided by federal agents working in collusion with local and state police, a violation of state law, and after a nearly five-year legal battle, on May 18, 2009, Lepp was sentenced to 10 years in prison. Failing his appeal, he is to report to prison on July 6, 2009. Lepp argues that he was not given a fair trial, and that crucial evidence was blocked, and that jurors were not told the truth of the case. This is the final episode for the season, and the official release date is the summer solstice, 2009. I couldn't think of a better person to interview for this final episode, so here I honor Eddie for his life's work and his bravery for standing up against these tyrants for us all. Those who want to help Eddie may help by calling the White House and their local representatives, and you can get information on that from eddielepp.com. That's eddielepp.com. There are no shows scheduled until at least mid-July. I am going to take a break, and I am out of here. I have a few people lined up for the near future starting in mid-July, including Acharya S., Steve Hager from High Times Magazine, and Steven Zarlinga of the American Monetary Institute. Also possibly coming up in the near future, Michael Sarian, and get out your lizard skins, but it looks like David Icke will be coming on in late August to discuss the New World Order, Zionism, and entheogens. I know many of you out there are probably pulling your hair about that little announcement right there, and I myself was very critical of many of Icke's ideas in the past, and actually I still am. But recently, some of our research has been crossing paths in some areas, so I thought it would be interesting to have him on and to hear him out. And I'm always very critical of people who attack researchers' work without reading their work first or talking to the researchers themselves, so I'm going to make good on that for myself. Also, thanks to Randy, Manhydra, and Star for coming through with donations this last week. Thanks to all of you so much for your support. We can't overemphasize how important it is for the donations to keep coming. And please don't wait for someone else to donate. It's your support we need. We now have over 53,000 listeners and downloads a month. And as I stated last week, for about every 12,000 listeners, only one or two of you donates. So, we need your help out there. If you're enjoying the show and you're passing on to your friends and colleagues, please donate, $5, $2, $1, whatever you can afford. I know times are tough, and I always repeat this, but we do need your support to keep the show going. You can also support this show by ordering a copy of the DVD or one of my books or the She Who Remembers audio archives from the www.gnosticmedia.com website. My book, Astrotheology and Shamanism, that I co-wrote with Andrew Rutaji. I have less than 40 copies of the color, numbered and signed edition remaining of that. And an update, I was giving people a nearly 30% discount for the color book DVD combo by sending everyone a free copy of the DVD with their order. Due to lack of funds right now, we can no longer send out the free DVD. So what I'm doing now is offering the DVD for the with the color edition of the book for an additional $9.50, which is still quite a discount, almost 55% off the DVD cover price. But I can only continue that offer until the first 100 numbered and signed copies of the color edition of ANS are gone. It's quite expensive to continue to send that stuff out for free. You can get yourself a copy of ANS in color or black and white on the website. And I also have copies of The Holy Mushroom, Evidence of Mushrooms in Judeo-Christianity, still available on the website. And these do go out autographed in appreciation for your support. And the views expressed by the authors and guests of this program are their own and are not necessarily those held by this host or Gnostic Media. And if you would like to go to the Gnostic Media website, you can check out the forums. You can watch the Pharmacocratic Inquisition DVD for free on the website. That's all at www.gnosticmedia.com. That's G-N-O-S-T-I-C media.com. If you would like to contact me directly, send email to contact@gnosticmedia.com. And I'm out of here for the next few weeks, and I can really use it. I need the break, that's for sure. And one last final word. I should mention that without Eddie Lepp's financial support for Gnostic Media back in 2004 with the writing of my first book, Astrotheology and Shamanism with Andrew, it's possible that ANS would not have made it to print and that Gnostic Media would not be here today. I consider Eddie a dear friend, and anyone who enjoys this podcast can thank him for making things happen. Thank you, Eddie. And finally, let me say, free Eddie Lepp. Thanks for listening. So, Eddie, welcome to Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 36. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. It's a real honor to be here. And like I said earlier, considering I have to turn myself in for 10 years imprisonment here in about 3 weeks, I guess everything's going pretty well.
Well, what can you say about your background and who is Eddie Lepp? And let's start off, let's just get to know who you are.
I'm the past national director for the American Medical Marijuana Association. I was the first person arrested, tried, and acquitted under Proposition 215. I'm the minister and head of the multi-denominational ministry for cannabis and Rastafari, the largest single bust in the history of the DEA, and the largest medical marijuana bust in the history of the world. I'm High Times Freedom Fighter of the Year, and I've been honored, I don't know, 10 or 15 times internationally for my activist work. I've pretty much dedicated my life to standing up for rights that are being stripped away from people, whoever the people are, whatever the rights are. But I'm pretty well known for being a pot activist, although I tend to talk about hemp a whole lot more than I talk about marijuana.
Talk a little bit about, if you wouldn't mind, your case and what transpired in 2004.
Well, in a nutshell, basically, the feds came in 2002 and raided the gardens, and no one was arrested or anything. And then in 2003, they didn't bother us at all. And then in 2004, we planted again. And they came in and raided us, and of course I was arrested. Every year for 7 or 8 years now, we've sent all of the local authorities, including the governor and the attorney general, the last couple years, letters telling them what we were doing, where we were growing, giving exact legal descriptions everything.
You're cutting out a little bit there.
It's my call interrupt. But we basically, you know, did everything in the world that we could to be legal and sent them these letters saying, hey, if we're not legal, please tell us so that we can correct this. We don't want problems. And none of the letters was ever answered by the sheriff, the district attorney, the attorney general, the governor. No one ever answered the letters. So we assumed what we were doing was completely legal because when they had the opportunity to tell us it wasn't, no one said a word.
So, and, go ahead.
Go right ahead.
Well, in 2004, I don't remember the exact date, but Jack Harris.
I believe it was August 18th.
Okay, well then it was August 17th that I was up at your place with Jack Harris. And we had stayed a couple of days up there with you and met a lot of... Actually, I think that was probably the first time or maybe the second time I went up to your place. And, you know, got to meet everybody and see what you were doing there. And, you know, you certainly weren't hiding anything. That's for certain. And, you know, you had your crop growing right alongside the highway and in sight of everyone. So, you know, it's not like you were hiding things off in the redwoods or anything like that.
Well, we had hoped that by doing it right out in the open, that they would understand that we were trying to be very honest and very open and allow everybody to see everything so that there wouldn't be questions. Sadly, they interpreted it as us trying to shove it in their face and, you know, go yada yada. And that wasn't the case at all. All we were trying to do through the ministry was help sick and dying people that with valid California recommendations, we allowed them to plant on our property, the ministry's property.
Can you talk a little bit about how you had your arrangement set up so that people can understand how you operated?
Basically what it was if you had a valid recommendation, you could get, normally it was around 6 to 10 plants, but, you know, there were some exceptions where we allowed more than that, depending on their medical needs and what their doctors recommended. And there were about 2,500 to 3,000 people involved in the field. And none of that evidence was allowed into court. So it made it real difficult to get the case, any justice in the case. You know, I went to Vietnam many years ago and offered up my life for this country based on, you know, baseball, hot dog, apple pie, and mom, you know. And I realize now that, you know, it's not the way that we were raised to believe when I was a young man. You know, I was supposed to get a fair and impartial trial in front of a jury of my peers and by a fair and impartial judge. And I didn't get any of that. What little truth was allowed into the hearing, the judge told the jury they had to discount and could not use in my defense. So there went the truth and whole truth and nothing but the truth in the trial. The prosecution rested their case several times and said they were done with their motions. And the judge on her own went ahead and proceeded with the proceedings, even though we had them beat. So I was prosecuted by the prosecution. And, you know, it's just a real fallacy to think that this was any kind of justice.
You there?
Yeah, I'm right here. I just was telling my daughter goodbye.
Well, what have you tried? Well, talk about they acquitted you on one or some of the charges, didn't they?
Well, they dropped four of the six charges, and then the two charges that they maintained, like I say, we actually beat them on the motions part of it, but the judge continued the trial. In other words, in the first instance, they threw out all of the warrants. So that should have been the end of the trial right there. Well, the judge said, after telling everyone that she would not allow them to come in and would not allow them to introduce the open field philosophy because they'd never mentioned it in 2.5 years, she turned around and not only let them bring it in, but she then used that as the reason to have the trial.
What is the open field philosophy?
Their open field thing is that they said they could see it from the road, and therefore they didn't need a search warrant. And she allowed that after saying she wouldn't. Then we made our motion for the religious defense under the Religious Freedoms Restoration Act, and she came out and spent 15 minutes telling us how great we had done and 10 minutes telling the prosecution how badly they had screwed up. My attorney and I are both ready to jump up in the air with joy, and she turns around and says, but because there was so many plants, it was possible that it'd be diverted for non-secular reasons. We're going to have the trial. And my attorney jumped right up and said, well, Your Honor, the UDV decision stated clearly that diversion is always a possibility and therefore in and of itself cannot be the reason to continue the prosecution. And she just laughed and said, that's a matter for the appellate court, and went ahead and had the trial. So do I feel that I was treated fairly by the judicial system? Not at all. Do I feel that I was singled out by our political system? Yes, I do.
What can you say about your appeal now?
Well, I'm out right now until the 6th of July when I self-surrender in Lompoc, and my attorney called me today and told me that if I ask for bail pending appeal, that they will take me into custody immediately. So I can't even ask for bail pending appeal. And that's, you know, really kind of chicken shit. You know, they put you in a position where you can't even have an opportunity to stay out on bail. I mean, I've been no problem to these people in 7 years, and why they feel they have to put me in prison now, I really don't know. Every report they've gotten from every probation person or from every pretrial guy, all of it all says the same thing. There was no victim. He's not a threat to anybody. He's not a threat to himself, and he's not doing anything to harm society, and he's not a threat to run. So, you know, it's hard to understand why they're doing it the way they're doing it, but I don't have any control over what they do, so I'm kind of at their mercy.
So tell me, why have you taken up the crusade for medical marijuana?
Well, the simple fact of the matter is I've seen firsthand exactly how well this sacred herb works, this gift from God. I mean, I don't think there's any arguing that it is, in fact, the tree of life and the burning bush, the bush of knowledge. And, you know, if you open your mind and look at what it does and accept the truth of what it does, there's no problem at all in understanding why it's the most used substance in the history of mankind. It's those that refuse to look and accept the truth that have trouble with marijuana or hemp at all. And because of that, I've been a crusader. I mean, like so many people, I read Jack's book and understood the truth of what the man was saying in that book, and understood that hemp can and will save the world if we give the plant the opportunity to do that.
Talk a little more about Jack Harris since you're on the subject.
Well, let me put it this way. Heroes are very special people, and everybody should have at least one hero. Everybody should have someone that they look up to and respect and would want to emulate. And I'm not talking about being a star. I mean, hell, anybody that can run fast or jump high can be a star and get arrested at 2:00 in the morning at a titty bar beating up your old lady or something. I'm talking about being a hero. I'm talking about rising above star status and setting an example people should follow. And, you know, as you go through life and you have a hero like Jack, you know, if you're lucky occasionally, you might get to actually meet your hero. And if you're real lucky, you know, you might get to spend a little time with him, maybe get an autograph or you know, tell him how great you thought his book was or something. In my case, I cannot tell you what an honor it is to have my hero not only be my hero, but also be my best friend. And it is an honor. Jack Herrera, in my opinion, is one of the greatest men that has ever lived. I know that some people have a little problem with his approach to how he presents his philosophy, But again, if you can look at the truth and accept the truth, there is no way you can argue with Jack Herrera. Jack is a visionary and a prophet, and he has shown the world how to save, heal, and cleanse itself. And whether or not we as a community are smart enough to heed Jack's advice and follow his teachings is entirely yet to be seen. Sadly, if we don't, I don't think there's going to be much of a world to worry about.
You know, I agree with that. And myself, having kind of come from the same position and reading Jack's book as a teenager and then meeting him and then, you know, myself, I've been friends with Jack now for about 20 years now. And so I know where you're coming from on that. What do you think is, well, let me ask you this. Let's talk a little bit about the medical use of marijuana and some of the things that have come out recently on how useful it is. And as far as running the ministry up there and your involvement in medical marijuana, what are the things that you have seen? What kind of benefits have you seen from people? And how have you seen medical marijuana affect people and that sort of thing?
Well, it's a really, you know, multifaceted question with a multitude of answers. I will run them off probably best, I think, by answering them with a few little stories. One, with Jack Herrera.
You're cutting out again. Somebody's calling you.
I call interrupted. It does it twice, and then they stop. Anyway, with Jack Herrera, Jack had a stroke many years ago, as everybody knows. And there's about a 6-inch drop going out my back door where you step down. And for many, many years, I walked out first, turned sideways, steadied myself, and allowed Jack to come out, lean against me, stumble down off of the step, grab him, get him situated, get him balanced, and get him motivated towards his vehicle. Now, Jack started on a substance called Rick Simpson oil, or Phoenix Tears, which is a concentrated form of pure THC. Jack's been on this stuff about 8 months now, and when Jack leaves my house now, he literally pushes me out of his way and runs out the door. His speech has improved, his memory's improved, everything about this man has improved. My wife, Linda, who sadly passed away a year and a half ago, when we first found out that she had cancer, it was full-blown stage 4, and her doctor told me that he figured she had 4 to 6 months left to live. We started immediately inundating Linda with tons of marijuana. We also started using pure hemp oil, edible grade hemp oil, which she drank an ounce of in the morning, an ounce of at night. We would coat her body daily, several times a day, with the holy anointing oil as the recipe followed in the Bible. She would consume vast amounts of edibles and smoke bodacious amounts of the plant. And about 2 months, I guess, before she died, it was pretty obvious that she was going downhill and that things were getting worse. And we went and talked to her doctor. And every time we saw her doctor, after Linda and my daughter would go out into the waiting room, I would buttonhole him back in the corner in the hallway and say, "Now tell me the truth." And we got there, and I basically, you know, said to him, "Hey, Doc, what's the deal?" And he said, "Jesus Christ, Danny, she should have been dead 4 months after I met her." He says, "I don't know what's kept her alive the last 2.5 years. I don't know if it was your peyote ceremonies or your sun dances or your sweats or your prayers or if it was all of the marijuana or all of the tea ceremonies or I don't know what it was, Eddie." He says, "But I know what it wasn't." He said, "It wasn't me. All I did was occasionally relieve her pain. Whatever kept her alive the last 2.5 years was something that you guys did. And the only thing we really did was inundated with the esoteric world. And Jack says if you listen to him when he speaks, that if you use marijuana daily on a regular basis, you're going to add 2.5 to 3 years to your life. And I know that's true because I lived it. I lived next to a woman who was told she had 4 months to live. And by using the volumes of THC that she used, she not only was able to extend her life 2.5 years, but she was able to do it at a very high quality. And up until 2 days before she died, she knew who she was, she knew who was in the room with her, she was able to talk to them, she was able to communicate with them, and carry on a pretty much normal life up through Thursday. And then she died on Saturday, or Sunday. Evening, I believe. Yeah, Sunday evening. So it was only the last 2 or 3 days that she was unsure of who she was because they were putting her the liquid opium. So I have seen firsthand what marijuana does. I've seen it extend lives. I've seen it improve health. I've seen it cure diseases. I've seen it do a multitude of things firsthand. And like I said earlier, anybody that is willing to sit here and look at the truth knows that you cannot argue with what Jack says in that book. It's that simple.
Well, I interviewed Rick Simpson on my show a few months back, and you just mentioned Rick Simpson's oil. What can you say about Rick and his research and what he's doing?
I think Rick is a saint. I really do. I think what he's doing is just one of the most sensational things. I can only hope that the governments and the universities and the people that can make some real difference will pay attention to what Rick's doing and will take his research and his studies to heart and realize and understand that marijuana does cure things like cancer and AIDS and a whole multitude of diseases that all they want to do is sell us pills at $10 and $15 a piece that only cause more side effects that need more pills. They're not worried about curing us. They're worried about getting rich. Rick Simpson is like us. He's worried about curing us. He's worried about curing the mother and saving this planet. And when you start putting the mother first and you start putting people first, then you get guys like Rick Simpson coming up with things like Rick has come up with. When you put money first, well, you end up with the pharmaceutical companies.
What do you think is the future of medical marijuana?
Oh, I sincerely and firmly believe that marijuana will be legal completely for all uses within 5 years, maybe 10 at the most. But right now you've got 29 state agricultural directors banging on Congress's door to legalize industrial hemp. You've got 12 or 13 states in the District of Washington that have legalized marijuana. There's another 8 or 10, 12 states that have it on the agenda. And these are states that, you know, it's like Iowa has got a medical marijuana bill now. Iowa passed a gay marriage law. I mean, they're more liberal than California is. So I really, truly anticipate it won't be long until there's 30, I think, 6 or 7 states that have a medical marijuana law. And as soon as 2/3 of the states have one, then it becomes federal. And they can't stop that. So, you know, I see it in the next few years becoming legal, and I see it becoming legal completely for recreational and industrial and all other uses, probably in the next 5 years.
You wrote a letter for Obama recently. Would you talk about that?
You know, President Obama promised all this change, and so far we haven't seen a whole lot. He made all these promises on the internet to all of us about how he was going to straighten this out, and now that he's been elected, he kind of makes jokes about those crazy hippies and freaks and whatever out on the internet when we're the ones that got him elected. And, you know, whether or not he'll rise up and be a man and keep his word and do the right thing, who knows? It's still seeming like it's pretty much business as usual as Washington, D.C. So I'm hard-pressed to determine exactly where my future lies.
Do you think that Obama intentionally gave false hope to Americans, and it seems that in the last few months, much of America has become quite frustrated with him and his handling of the economy and his bailing out the banks, as opposed to, say, what Ron Paul or Dennis Kucinich are opposing. And, you know, from my own perspective, it seems like he's out to further bury the U.S. in debt and not help us. He's working for the banks.
Well, I don't know what the man's motivations are or are not, you know. But I know this, whether it's him or you or me or Jack or, you know, Miss California, somebody has got to rise up that is truly going to put the people of this nation first and the people of the world first. Because the way they're doing business right now is just that. They're doing business. The United States right now is ruled by corporate loyalty, and sadly, Obama is proving that. Had Obama come in and taken charge and really done what he led us all to believe he was going to do, then I don't know if I could make that statement. But based on the way things have happened, it's pretty obvious that the corporate royalty is still in charge in the United States of America.
Yeah, I can't argue against that. And if your appeal doesn't work out, what do you see as going to be the focus of activism in the next couple of years? In other words, you know, your personal focus, what you can affect, whether you're free or not. What role do you think you'll be able to play, and what do you think you'll be? How do you think you'll utilize the future time?
Well, I've been doing creator's work for many years now, and I honestly believe that I walk in the palm of his hand, and I am sure that if he ends up deciding that it's necessary for me to go to prison for a while, that I will be able to carry his work on inside just as easy as I do outside. So I really don't have any concerns as far as going in that respect. Of course, I have the concerns. I don't want to leave my family. I don't want to give up my freedom, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, accepting that it's something that must be done is something I've already done. And, you know, I will get through it. I'm not worried about that.
What do you think is the most important facet of your work?
I don't know. I would think myself personally, the fact that I've raised awareness of the medical marijuana issue and of cannabis, hemp, sativa as a whole, I believe carried this message internationally all around the world. And I think that is truly the one thing we're the proudest of, is that we were able to get this message to so many people. I mean, we've done many, many things that we're proud of, but getting the message that we've got to so many, I think, is the one thing that we're really the proudest of.
Eddie, what can people do to help with the medical marijuana movement in your case, et cetera?
Well, in my case, again, they can make phone calls to President Obama, email the White House, email their local congressmen and senators, and let them know they want me freed. What can they do in general? Well, they can go to any and all hemp events or cannabis events. They can join the national organizations who, although they really aren't accomplishing a whole lot as far as the legalization, they are a voice, and by belonging to them, your voice is heard. So participate in all the events. The main thing that they can do is be politically active. Write your congressman or email your congressman and your senators and let them know not just about medical marijuana, but about any issue you're not happy about. The only thing that changes a politician's opinion is the people that put him in office. He don't care what they're thinking in Arizona. He could give a shit less about Nevada or New Mexico. But boy, you let the people from Fresno and Sacramento call him, and he's going to perk up and listen. So at any level, if there's laws or rules or regulations or something you're not happy with, be politically involved. Call these people and let them know you're not happy, or let them know you are happy.
Why don't you run or seek political asylum somewhere?
Well, if I did that, it would be admitting guilt. And I didn't do anything illegal, wrong, or against the law in the state of California at all. Now, the federal government has taken exception with my actions, but the state didn't. If I took off, it would look like I agreed with the federal government, that I was a criminal. I'm not a criminal. And I plan on taking this through the appellate process and kicking their ass and proving to them I'm not a criminal. And once I've proven to them not a criminal, then I plan on suing the hell out of them so that they don't do this to people. What they have done to me is unconscionable. There's a major Supreme Court decision now called Gonzalez versus Oregon, where the Supreme Court of the United States said clearly, if it is an accepted state medical practice, the federal government has no jurisdiction and no business being involved, period. Now, medical marijuana has been an accepted state medical practice in the state of California since 1996. Now, I cannot help it if those in the federal government are so ignorant they cannot read and understand the Supreme Court decision, but it's there, and it's pretty clear what it says. And they're in direct violation of it. But that's because all they are is a bunch of cowboys and gangsters with badges. The DEA raids that were conducted on my house were guerrilla terror tactics, deliberately breaking things that can't be replaced for no reason other than the fact they could, stealing money, stealing keepsakes, drinking beer, riding all of the farm equipment around, raising hell like it was a circus. And these aren't things I'm making up because I wasn't here. I was being transported to jail. These are the stories I've heard from all of the neighbors and all of the people that were taking pictures and looking at all of this stuff going on after they had hauled me off. So, you know, it's time for the American people to take this country back and quit letting these kinds of things be perpetrated on us, because it is our country. We are the government. And it's up to us to straighten out those we've elected to represent us. So hopefully that's something that people will care enough about and get involved enough in and try to make a change.
What can you say about this sheriff down in San Diego who's arguing, well, basically he's going against state law and saying it's against federal law, and then there's the whole issue of what's not designated in the Constitution is left to the states to decide. And really, the federal drug laws in and of themselves in that regard are illegal. And I guess someone could say, well, if they wrote a law about it, it's legal. But
well,
to me,
that's not really true.
Well, you know, and to me, if they're violating the supreme law of the land, which is the Constitution, then, you know, this sheriff, you know, and the whole lot of them are wrong, and they're, you know, they're so wrapped up into, oh, well, the law says this. Well, how about how the law is a violation in the first place? Do you have any?
Well, the thing is, for example, the CSA, which is what's putting me in prison, isn't a law. It's an act. It's not even a law. That's the thing that's hard to understand here. Because what they're doing with codes and ordinances and acts and bills. They're not doing it under the law. They're not doing one bit of this under the law. They're doing it all under the color of law, which, if I'm not mistaken, makes it pretty illegal.
What can you say about sovereign citizenship? And you know, you would, at one time you had applied for ambassadorship.
We're still working on that, and the embassy is still fighting with the federal government trying to get me free. The federal government, sadly, is turning a deaf ear. Now, whether or not they'll be able to continue to turn a deaf ear once the world courts get involved, I don't know. But again, this gets back to what I said about, you know, we have to, as individuals, rise up and try to do what we can to make this mess go away. And by me doing what I'm doing, hopefully I'm setting an example, showing people that one man can make a difference if he cares enough to get off his lazy ass and make a difference.
Why did you do all of this in the first place?
Well, I didn't realize it many years ago in Vietnam that I was smoking marijuana to help deal with the atrocities I was involved in, but I did. And then I spent about 15 years in the bottom of a booze bottle or snorting lines or popping pills or running around chasing women or gambling or doing whatever I could to forget Vietnam. And then one day I got tired of being a drunk. I got tired of being a worthless piece of shit, if you will. And I thought about who I was. I had that moment of clarity they refer to in AAA. And, you know, RAA, rather, not AAA. But I realized that I needed to straighten myself out. So I gave up all the drugs. I gave up all the booze and all of the pills and everything. And I ended up married to Linda, my wife who passed away. And she got cancer about 12 years ago, I guess, something like that. And when she got the cancer, they'd gone in and cut her throat from ear to ear and taken out half her thyroid on one side. That morning, I just got the word that it was in the other side of the thyroid and they would have to go ahead and operate again. And I was up tending a garden that I'd put in for. In fact, it was a garden I was arrested in, which later I would become the first person arrested, tried, and acquitted under 215. But I was setting up under this beautiful 250-year-old pine tree overlooking the garden. And I was smoking my sacred sacrament, communing with the Creator. And I made a deal with him. I didn't ask for a miracle. I only asked that he help Linda understand that life was worth living and it was worth fighting for, and to give her the courage and strength to do that. And that if he would, that I would dedicate the rest of my life to spreading the word about the sacred herb and to trying to help those less fortunate than myself, and in some cases those more fortunate than myself. And the good Lord gave me another almost 15 years with Linda, and they were happy years for her. They were good years. She had a good quality of life. He kept his end of the bargain, and I'm keeping mine, and I will till the day I die. You know, they can put me in jail, Jan. They can imprison my shell, but they can never imprison my immortal soul. They can never imprison my spirit or who I am. They don't scare me. Crossing God, that scares me to death. There ain't no way I'll ever break that promise. And that's how I ended up here. That's why I'm glad I'm here. And that's why, if I had it all to do over again, I'd do it over again. I'm not saying I wouldn't change a couple things. Believe me, if I could change a couple things and keep from getting arrested and keep from all of this other bullshit of going on, I would. The other side of it is, when I look at the totality of the whole situation, would I do it over? You betcha. You betcha.
What do you think you would do different?
Well, I would have been, when I sent the letters to the local authorities and the president or the governor and the attorney general, I would have gone ahead and sent them all to the DEA and the president of the United States and the attorney general of the United States, because I really believe if I would have had letters directed to the federal government that the jury probably would have cut us loose on this. And there's a couple other things like that, but all in all, we wouldn't have done much different. I mean, my God, we were completely and totally open and honest. The Lake County Sheriff's Department for 6 or 7 years had a standing offer to come up without a warrant anytime they wanted. All they had to do was call us and tell us they were here. So what I could have changed, what I could have done different to be more appeasing to them, I really don't know. We tried at every level to get along with them. We tried at every level to work with them. So I'm really unsure, you know, why it went so far south, but it has.
You know, I just don't understand where the feds expect patients to get medical marijuana. You know, it's, you know, they say that they're going to stop prosecuting patients and caregivers, and then, you know, and then they're locking up caregivers, and they're shutting down clubs, and they're arresting growers, and they're still harassing, patients, you know, in San Diego. And I guess San Diego just recently started giving out the ID cards, but, you know, these are areas that they'd still rather harass patients than support them.
But San Diego's slightly different. Now, since that Supreme Court refusal to hear their case, they pretty much are running around with their tails between their legs down in San Diego. There's, I think, four dispensaries in San Diego now and more coming.
Well, that's a positive change, and I know that San Bernardino was part of that suit too, and is supposed to be issuing those cards as well now. What do you think about? I mean, they're basically putting patients in a catch-22 where they're trying to shut down these clubs, and I know L.A. is in the process of trying to shut down a bunch of them, and you know they don't want people to go to the clubs because, well, the clubs are not legal underneath federal law, as this sheriff from San Diego points out. But at the same time, the only other option is to get it off of the street, you know, and most people, especially if they're ill, they're you know, it takes a lot of work and a lot of know-how to grow good cannabis. And where do they expect people to go?
Well, the thing is, Jan, they don't want people using cannabis. They want people going to the pharmaceutical companies, because if you look at our politicians, 99% of them have got stock in pharmaceutical companies. Now, there's legalized pot thing on CNN right now.
Really? Would you like to put the phone up to the speaker so that people could hear that?
Yeah, hold on.
There's a lot of people. I talk to people at this dispensary.
Can you hear that, Jan?
Yeah.
You know, institutional medicine doesn't want research in this because they're not going to be able to make money off of cannabis if it's sold in smoking form.
Well, that's a completely false argument. There are already two FDA-approved cannabinoid drugs, Chesimet and Marinol. They've been approved. There's one in the works right now called Sativex. There's a lot of studies that have been done on marijuana, plus and minus, in terms of its effect on the human body. There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
And I can
see what I was saying earlier about it being legal in 5 years.
Right.
And this is just emphasizing it. We've been on Chris Matthews in the last week. This is the third or fourth day in a row that Anderson Cooper is doing stuff on marijuana. He did a two-hour interview down in L.A. at the pharmacy, one of the major dispensaries down there. And, you know, I just have to believe that things going to change here real, real quick. I really do.
You know, unfortunately, Anderson Cooper was part of the propaganda that helped some states start illegalizing Salvia divinorum, which I'll be having a show about soon. But at least he appears to be doing something worthwhile now. But one thing I thought that was kind of ironic was right when you put the phone to the television, they were actually talking about the exact same subject that we were just on.
Exactly.
Talk about synchronicity there.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. It's really amazing that, you know, they're sitting here talking about legalizing it and taxing it, and I'm going to jail for 10 years.
Incredible.
This guy's talking now about he's talking about the cost of tobacco and alcohol.
So you're saying even though we get more money in taxes, there will be other...
If you legalize marijuana...
Well, maybe you should go up closer or turn it off or something.
Yeah.
Like they do alcohol and tobacco right now.
Yeah, it's amazing where they're saying they would make 10 times the money off of taxes than it cost to treat all of the problems from alcohol and tobacco, and they still won't do it. And it just, you know, they're making the point time after time about why it should be legal.
Well, you know, people don't care about the facts. They've made up their minds, and you know, don't, as the old saying goes, I've made up my mind. You can't, you know, you can't sway me with facts.
Well, you know, again, it gets back to what I said earlier. If you can just look at the truth, you know, the truth is right there in front of us with this cannabis situation. I mean, it's been used for 25,000 years that we can document and prove. And you certainly are aware at a much deeper level than most people exactly what I'm talking about when I talk about the esoteric substances and their use by mankind. I mean, marijuana's been found in every civilization we've discovered in three places: the healing places, the royal chambers, and the spiritual or religious center of all of these various civilizations, whether it was the Mayas or the Aztecs or, you know, the Egyptians or wherever they dug it up. And it's not me talking about this, as you well know.
I think Chris Bennett has recently recanted that there was ever any pre-Columbian use of cannabis in the New World. Reports of that have scientifically not been substantiated, but I perfectly well know what you mean by Old World and India, and I know for a fact that Greece, it was heavily highly regarded as medicine and things like that.
Exactly, and I mean, you know, whether or not it was in the Central Americas or not, who knows, but the point is that it's got pretty much worldwide use for the last 25,000 years. It's pretty well documented from everybody. And like I said, it's not a bunch of old hippies from the 60s spewing this forth. These are documents that were made 150, 200 years ago when some of the most learned men in the world were sent out by their National Geographic associations to find these things. And they reported the truth. They didn't care that it was marijuana. They just reported that it was marijuana because nobody cared back then. So like I say, this isn't stuff we made up. This is stuff that some of the smartest men in the world went out and discovered, found, and reported. And why they can't accept the truth from them, I don't know.
I think it all has to do with vested interests and protecting gold-lined pockets. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, it's all about money. It's not about the people. It's about power. It's
about the almighty dollar and corporate royalty.
Yep, and they don't care about us. They don't care about the planet. They don't care about anything other than keeping their agendas going.
That's it. That's exactly right. And, you know, it's just sad that, like I say, we've allowed those that we've elected to represent us to do this. I don't advocate violence myself, but, you know, if our ancestral liberators, you know, Jefferson and Washington were alive, they'd be walking up and down the streets of Washington, D.C. with Uzis right now, shooting everything that moved.
Yeah, you know, that's probably true. In fact, that would be true. I think that, you know, from the constitutional perspective, even though they did allow slavery and things like that, you know, the current government is certainly in violation of every aspect of the constitutional laws that they've sworn to uphold. And, you know, not to mention being against humanity and life in general. You know, industrial hemp for fuel, you know, they keep all this talk about looking for a fuel source, and, you know, Jack proved 25 years ago that hemp could replace, you know, America's energy needs for, you know, with 2% of land mass. And here we are 25 years later, and they still haven't used it. And that's 25 years we've lost to be able to do something about all of this.
Well, not only that, can you imagine if we'd have had that 6 billion acres planted of secondary agricultural land in the hemp that Jack's been talking about, we would have not taken one drop of oil out of the mother in the last 25 years. We would not have to have cut down one tree from the mother in the last 25 years. And we would have improved the air quality and the global warming and everything else. You know, it's just, like I say, it's ludicrous that they allow what they're allowing to happen, because it could all be solved very easily.
If you do have to serve the full 10 years, what do you hope to see when you come out?
Well, when I come out, I hope to see marijuana and cannabis hemp completely and totally legal. I would love to see restaurants and coffee shops, if you will, as they have in Amsterdam. I'd love to see alcohol completely and totally illegal. I would like to see all other hard drugs not made and put on the streets. I'd like to see the corporate royalty no longer in control. I'd like to see cars that get 70 and 80 miles to the gallon on hemp-based gasoline. So, you know, what I would hope for, I guess, is when I come out in 10 years, I really would hope to find it a better world than the one I went away from. Instead, I know it's just going to turn into a bigger cesspool. And I'm afraid that that's the truth of it. I don't think that, you know, Obama can change enough of what has to be changed. I'm not even sure if he cares enough to change it. We'll see. But my hope would be when I come out that it's a better world, not a worse one. That's why we even done the Grokashi thing that we're doing. It's completely organic. It'll help clean up petroleum spills, cleans water, increases yield. I mean, it's just an amazing product out of the Orient. It's been around for thousands of years, and it really, really plays into the green world. And, you know, that's what we're doing now, is getting that product out there and hoping that, like I say, one man can make a difference if they care enough to get up and make a difference. So hopefully we've got that message across to some of your fans tonight, and hopefully some of them will rise up and try to make a difference.
Talk about Eddie Lepp Legal Defense Fund.
You can go to EddieLepp.com or EddieLepp.org or FreeEddieLepp.com or FreeEddieLepp.org and get the information on how to make donations to help us save the farm and to help fight my appellate case.
And what do you want people to remember about this interview? And if you don't win your appeal, what do you want people to remember about you over the next 10 years?
I think what I said a minute ago. I think I want them to remember that one man can make a difference, or a woman, if they're willing to get up and make a difference. And all you got to do is ask yourself, how much am I willing to take before I'm going to have to get up and say something? You know, who will be the first one to stand up and scream? And I think that's what I'd like them to remember the most, that they can make a difference if they want to.
Well, Eddie, I've known you for, I guess, about 6 years now, and I consider you a dear friend, and you've always opened your home up to myself and my family, and you've always been there for us, and I really appreciate everything that you've done, and I appreciate you helping getting my first book in print, and your support and everything that you've done, and the changes that you've affected in people and the world. And, you know, if you have to turn yourself in, we're going to miss you.
Well, looks like I'm going to have to, and I'm going to miss you guys too, but I ain't going nowhere. You'll still hear from me. We've got a crew here, and I'll write them and talk to them on the phones, and you guys will get my messages from behind the chain link. And I just want to say in closing, thank you so much, Sean. I've got many, many wonderful hours reading your book, and the fact that I had some small part to play in it truly warms my heart every time I look at it. I'm very, very proud of you, and I love you and your family very much. And I'd like to finish by saying I thank you. Linda thanks you. Our family thanks you. Respect all, hurt none, and love one another. Thank you.
And we love you very much, too. And, you know, like I said, you know, we're going to miss you. And really, I think, are you still there?
I'm here, baby.
I really think that without you, astrotheology and shamanism would never have made it to print. So,
well, thank you so much, dude.
You you may think you're an insignificant part of that, but to me, you're a big part of that. So, anyway,
you were the talent, young man. I just was in the right place at the right time. Again, I'm honored to have been part of it. It's a wonderful, wonderful book, and anybody that hasn't read it should.
Well, thank you for that. And we've been listening to Eddie Lepp. This has been Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 36. And Eddie, thank you so much for coming on the show, and you'll be in our hearts and minds.
Well, thank you so much. And thanks once again to all your viewers. I really appreciate it.
I'm getting a little bit I'm getting a little bit teared up here, so let's in the interview, and I'll let you grab your other call.
All righty. Well, John, thank you so much for calling me, and thank you again so much for doing this interview, and I'll talk to you soon. All righty.
All right. Take care.
Give my love to your wife and baby.
I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And this concludes Gnostic Media Research and Publishing's podcast number 36, and that was my interview with Eddie Lepp. And there'll be no more interviews until mid-July, and in the meantime, I leave you with a song from Los Marihuanos, friends of mine and Eddie's who often play at many of the hemp rallies and medical marijuana events around the country. This is their song, My Friend. Enjoy.
Mary Jane, you're my friend. I will love you and smoke you till the end. You are my friend. I will smoke you till the end. Mary Jane,
Mary Jane,
you're my friend.
You're my friend.
For your presence, it's your beautiful leaves, your smell, your essence. It's the way you make me feel. Whenever I'm with you, Mary, you know the deal. For real, you make me happy, never sad. You were there through the good and the bad. Kept me sane through the passing of my dad. I thank the Lord Jesus Christ for what I had. They try to destroy you, make you illegal, but they're ignorant, man, but they don't see you. All the good you could do for the universe, all the sick people you could help in the universe, all the good we can do when we kick a verse. Marihuanos FCM always kick a verse. It could only get better, never worse. Please believe, patient first.
Jane, you're my friend. I will love you and smoke you till the end. You are my friend.
You're tied all night. Oh, so good. You put me in the corner when you ain't near. You got me fiending for ya. You drive me loco when you touch my lips. Light my fire, puffin' hit. Inhale, now I'm straight. One more toke, I'll be taking away to a place where I don't give a damn. Just my light, my peace in the bag. All that drama, you can keep that shit. Shut your mouth and trip up this organic. Some of that know the flame. Medicated, grow to ease the pain. You know I love it and I keep the truth. And to the ones that grow, my respects to you.
Mary Jane,
you're my friend. I will love you and smoke you till the end. You are my friend. I will smoke you till the end.
Every time that your help ease and please my mind in time, people will find what you have inside. A special gift that I give a twist before I take it here to an extravaganza. Cause you're my marijuana, sense in me, you know I want you for the rest of my life. You know I'm gonna ignite and show the whole world what you do is right.
Mary Jane, you're my friend. I will love you and smoke you till the end. You are my friend. I will smoke you till the end.